Save big on your Thanksgiving feast, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound packs of juicy Kroger red, green, or black seedless grapes for $3.99 with your card and a digital coupon. Then get 1-pound packs of flavorful Private Selection 80% lean Angus ground chuck for $4.99 each with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You're listening to Power Athlete Radio, a podcast dedicated to empowering your performance every damn day. Join former NFL pro and Power Athlete founder John Wellborn as he dissects the greatest minds in strength, conditioning, and more. So whether your goal is to be the hammer, destroy mediocrity, or simply move the dirt, you've come to the right place. Now with the warm-up done, let the gains begin.
Hey, Power Athlete Nation, I want you to buckle up for a hard-hitting podcast with Mr. Brendan Cullen from Metabolic. For those of you guys not in the know, Metabolic is a franchise dedicated to making people strong. Shocker, I know. They looked at a lot of the shortcomings of CrossFit in those early days and really just leaned heavy into strength and are now on their way to franchising 50 gyms and really selling the gospel of strength and athleticism. As you know, those are some of my favorite things. So buckle up, Mr. Brendan Cullen. I mean, obviously you got your start in the CrossFit space. I mean, what did you, and this is pretty open-ended question that I'm pretty sure I could answer. What were the shortcomings that you observed in CrossFit that said, hey, you know what, I'm going to try to do this in a better, more cohesive, better branded way? Because if you think CrossFit is so much of the Wild West, and it was even in those days, that to come in and say, all right, we're going to go, I'm assuming it's a franchise type model.
Yeah, we franchise our model now, yeah.
So, I mean, a lot of problems that I saw in CrossFit. I'm sure everybody has, but very few people decided to throw their hat in the ring and said, you know what, let me bring a better product to market.
Yeah, so I think I got to see when it went from being this very cool behind the scenes thing to pop culture. And that's what made us start really questioning things. You know, I was about 25 years old training for hockey, and I was working in this really gritty boxing gym in downtown Buffalo. And I saw this guy like in the corner doing some really wacky workouts. And at the end of all of my like sparring sessions, we would just do an AMRAP to kind of round out the day. And that was kind of my introduction to, you know, what CrossFit was. And that was, you know, when main site was one page on a website that had a comment section. So, I had a career ending head injury, which kind of right at the height of my career. And I just had to like adapt.
Pussy.
What's that?
Pussy.
Yeah, exactly. It was weird too, because I didn't think it was going to be career ending, because I'd never had a concussion. And I was like the guy that said, this stuff's got to be bullshit, because like I was a very aggressive player that fought a lot. And I'm like, if anyone would have had a concussion, it would have been me, until I had the concussion. And funny enough, when I was working with all my neurologists, they compared more of my style of game to like a football player, like so much contact over a long period of time that you were just ready for this big concussion that ended up being the end of my career. Well, my co-founder of this company, when I was sitting out that season, he ended up having a hernia surgery in the middle of the year. And he already knew he was retiring. So we were talking about what life after hockey could look like. And at that point, I think there was 2 CrossFits in all of Charlotte and like 125 in the world. So we kind of became involved in CrossFit in those real early days. And yeah. I mean, my coaching staff was me, a Navy SEAL, an Army Ranger, and a Division I football player. And that's kind of what your gym was. And then all of a sudden it hit pop culture. And like all of us that were in that gym, we all had the lifting backgrounds and we were used to intensity. So it made all the sense in the world. But then once I saw, like, you know, I hate to say it, but people coming out of Zumba and they were underneath a barbell, it got ugly pretty quick.
Yeah.
So that started the conversation. Like, what is this thing that we could do somewhere in the middle? You had kind of like sports specific training, which honestly I would have considered CrossFit, and you had like YMCA boot camps. There was nothing in the middle. Boutique wasn't really there. So we We knew that the barbell was scaring off some people. We knew that there was a lot of people doing things like running, tries, yoga, whatever it was. But for whatever reason, they weren't landing in our doors. So we started removing, within our CrossFit program, we started removing the clock, or sorry, the scoreboard on weekends. We built out team workouts that were more just fun, monostructural workouts of getting work done together. And we started noting, why are our Saturdays bigger than our Monday through Friday? And that kind of was the birth of, let's create a strength bias program, remove the barbell, focus a lot more on athleticism versus just straight up and down and straightforward, and, you know, target everyday people versus trying to train the professional athlete.
Yeah. So my, you know, this would have been what, 2004, five, six.
Yeah, I think I started CrossFitting in that gym about 2004 and five. I think I got my cert L1 in 2006.
Yeah. I came to CrossFit, as you know, in 2008. And one of the first questions that Glassman asked me was, do you think this is an athletic form of training? And I was, I realized that the best trick the devil ever played was convincing the world that he didn't exist. The best trick that Greg Glassman ever played was convincing the world that intensity and want somehow led to athleticism. Uh-huh. And when he asked me that, I was like, no, not at all. I mean, you're basically doing nothing but bilateral hip hinging in a sagittal plane. There's no transverse, there's no movement, there's no, you know, this, and especially, you're not doing anything to foster and develop athleticism. And at that point, he kind of was pissed off and was like, well, then you figure it out. And that was actually where CrossFit football came from.
Really?
Yeah. It was, you know, heavy, hard, and fast, and we're going to move around. And it was, as I tried to even explain to them, this is where CrossFit will eventually go to, because this is more exciting. People want to lift heavy weights. They want to see big people do things and move through space because it's exciting. You know, watching people do, you know, 100 thrusters with a 45-pound barbell is not exciting to anybody, least of all the coach watching it. And I think that's why people burned out so much, because just watching people do exercise is not exciting. It's very hard to be passionate about that.
Well, the big thing for me, just I was already there in my head. And I believe, if I remember correctly, when you were giving this, was it Miami or was it Austin?
No, it was Austin, Texas. Because as soon as CrossFit football launched, and I know this is why, we got like 17,000 hits the first day. And all of a sudden we got all these early adopters, to the point that the adoption was so big that all of a sudden CrossFit HQ and Glassman looked at me as the enemy. And I went from having this like extremely symbiotic relationship where everything was great to, these people are trying to fucking end me at every chance. And like, I should have just been smart and been like, well, go fuck yourselves, and walked away and gone on with my life. But, a part of me was like, you know, still believed a little bit in this mission, the community, and wanted to offer what I knew to a whole bunch of people. Fucking regardless of what the powers that be thought they knew, which they didn't know much, and their fucking weirdness. I like looked at the community and the people that we were dealing with, and I was like, you know, these are the people that we're here to service. I'm going to continue to do this in spite of what these fucking assholes on the other side are doing.
Yeah.
And they spent the next 9 years, doing everything they could to thwart, destroy, and fucking water down my program. They shot hundreds of hours of all of our content, at seminars, sent people there. They put out 2 videos, none of which were me. One of them was Ben Oliver teaching something he shouldn't have been teaching, which was this kind of inside conversation I'd had with Dr. Romanoff. And then another one was Chris McQuilkin teaching the floor press, and Chris can't floor press and was just teaching it like ad hoc. So those are the 2 videos. They searched for the 2 shittiest videos they could, and those are the ones they put out to the world. They're fucking awful people.
Yeah.
And I think they were benevolent in the beginning, and then they saw the money. I mean, I remember Glassman telling me that he couldn't wait to get out of the gym business. The day that he figured out he could sell seminars and affiliates, he never wanted to coach people because there was no fucking money in it. And yet this is the dream that he was selling people. So, you know, and but at the end of the day, the people that were showing up that wanted to get better were the people that we were working with. So I almost looked at it like a burning house, right? Like we were just running in, pulling people out, just, you know, and then we were trying to save a lot of people. We interrupt this episode with a shameless self-promotion. Do you have limited access to equipment and restricted time to train? Let me introduce you to Lean Enable, our bare essentials training program for those lean on time and equipment. Don't let limitations hold you back. Get able-bodied with our adaptive training to tackle the daily demands of life. Head to powerathletehq.com/lean and able and claim your 7-day free trial today. Now back to the show.
Yeah. And the thing that, so I was really lucky when I was like 16 years old, my dad got me a personal trainer as I was kind of chasing that dream.
Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in just outside of Toronto. So okay. St. Catharines, Ontario, Canadian boy. Yeah. He was straight out of college, football player, exercise science guy. And he put me on Bigger, Faster, Stronger as a 16-year-old. And at that point, all of my teammates and people I was competing with, they pretty much were bodybuilding and cycling. That was the hockey program. So I would just show up in camp in a different type of shape. I didn't really know what was going on, but I was doing the Bigger, Faster, Stronger program. So when I saw you speak, I think you talked a lot about, developing work capacity versus skill at a certain point of the program. And why that was like so important to me was hockey's so unique because your skill happens on the ice. Sure. And there's only so much you can do in the weight room. So you're best off getting stronger and faster and just becoming a better athlete. The other thing I like too is some of the lifts that were part of CrossFit, the core of CrossFit just wasn't important for the sport of hockey. So even your 9 foundational movements, we broke it down into 6. We squatted, we front squatted, we benched, and we did push press. Push press just translated to the game better for us, I felt. Sure. Deadlift, Olympic rows, and we power cleaned every day and kind of like a 3-day split. And then the middle days, I would take the guys to the track and we would do, track sprints that were specific to our sport. That is about 45 seconds on and a minute and a half off. We do 8s, 4s, 2s, and 1s. And the other day was hill running. And
sounds like a pretty good program.
Yeah. I mean, like I looked back at it because I actually found the program of working with these athletes and I remember hearing you speaking and I'm like, so this is actually how you take portions of CrossFit, adapt it to the sport, bring in the right time domain to the sport and have a more intelligent program. And it worked out extremely well for these players.
This episode of Power Athlete Radio is powered by Train Heroic, the most immersive strength training app experience on the market. We've built an online training business by partnering with Train Heroic to deliver all of our world-class training programs like Jack Street, Hammer, Field Strong, and Grindstone. To learn which Power Athlete training program best suits your goals, head to powerathletehq.com/training. And if you're a coach looking to build a business with the best training tech in the business, head to trainheroic.com/powerathletehq. And now back to the show. Yeah, what people forget when you train athletes is in the beginning of the, let's say like the life cycle of an athlete, you don't need a lot to drive adaptation. And especially for younger athletes, I'll just give you an example. Somebody commented on our YouTube page and asked for this, like, could you write a detailed program for a kid that's in season? It's playing some form of like organized team ball 9 months out of the year and this, and your programs don't necessarily fit. And I just shook my head and I was like, the fact that people are so dogmatic and that they can't make the adjustments. Okay. If it's 4 days a week and you want it to be 2 days a week, then do it 2 days a week. Which day? Mm-hmm. I don't know. Fucking surprise me. Like I'm much more apt to see people take something and modify it their way and then let me know how it works than make some weird fucking die on the cross homage to ask me to do something that, I think this would be great that you should market it. No, fucking one person's going to buy this. And like, it's not worth my time, but you know what? Yeah. If you create something based upon the principles, it should be some from progressive overload. Okay. Like everything else we do, like I shouldn't bitch about this stuff because this is why we have a job. But in the realm of training athletes, the level of complexity goes up over time as somebody becomes more efficient, more adaptive, and just like, they're kind of like card tricks, right? Like I can do some card tricks and like one card trick wows my kids. All of a sudden you get up and you've been doing card tricks for years. Now all of a sudden they're 30 years old. They're not wowed by those card tricks unless they're really good. And the same thing happens with training athletes. And now all of a sudden a basic linear progression gets into some undulating periodization and this, and you're going to work through it. And all of a sudden the shit gets really fancy. The problem is everybody wants to buy the fancy car for the 16-year-old. And it doesn't need to happen. And then also most people don't have a understanding of where they sit in that paradigm or really like where they are on that mountain. So I always felt that it would be intelligent when people come in that there should be some basic things that people should be able to accomplish that allow them to kind of know where they are in the line. You know, one of the ones, and you talked about it great, you know, some guy comes in, he's a football player and has done this. You assume that he's done a certain amount of training up until this point. That was always funny in CrossFit where all of a sudden somebody shows up and, oh my God, this person, yeah, that girl was a competitive level 10 gymnast for 15 years. You don't think that this stuff is easy? I used to take my girls to this Azarian gymnastics place down in South County and when we lived in California. And he was an Olympic, Olympian himself, and a bunch of the girls that were on the Olympic team trained there. These girls trained like 2-3 hour sessions a day that their warm-up would make any CrossFitter puke. That's why all of a sudden these gymnastic girls come in and they're like, wow, this is great. This is so much easier than what I've been doing since I was 3. But there should be a way. And I think what you're talking about is understanding, you know, like what you're training for, you know, understanding that fitness is very personal and it's really driven and limited by what you want to accomplish. And more importantly, how much time you have, how much adaptation. You know, I felt like with CrossFit, there was such like an all in or all out mentality. There was no like, you know, like there was no place for like the recreational person that wanted to like cycle and swim and show up in 1 or 2 days a week. It was like you show up every day and get set on fire. And the only way that you don't get set on fire is you got to show up 4 or 5 days a week just to be able to handle the load. So one of the things that we really wrestled with was like, how do you kind of bridge this? How do you develop a program where somebody's like, hey, I want to do other things and I want to do this. What's a program that makes everything better? Because when I go on and I do 100 pull-ups and I rip the fucking shit out of my hands, I can't swim, I can't bike. And there was no room for anything other. And you needed these people that were super devoted and they showed up and they wanted this to be their whole fucking lives. And early on, I think that was somewhat attainable, but I always felt that that would be the death of CrossFit, was just the fact that it was so non-inclusive of all of the other stuff, which was weird because when you talk to Glassman, one of their, you know, the tenets of the deal was like, learn new sports and practice them regularly. But yet in their model, that didn't pay because you needed people to show up 2 on, 1 off. So I felt that there was a lot of confusion. And what I always, you know, push with CrossFit football is at the end of the day, nobody paid me to lift weights. Like lifting weights was how I sharpened my blades so I could go out and play football. You know, there was never a point where a guy asked me like, oh, hey, what'd you bench? But he knew when I hit him what I benched. So that ability to be able to train at a high level and be able to translate it onto the field, that was always the magic. And I've spent the last, you know, decade plus figuring that out to the point where when people ask me, I'm like, no. I figured this out. I know how to make bigger, stronger, more athletic people. I know how to fuck. I've hacked this code for over a decade. All you have to do is follow the program. No. I'm not kidding you. You just fucking follow it. And I think the same thing is true. Like you saw all of these, I felt like a lot of times it was like people stumbling around when if you take a step back, there was such an easier way to do this. It just it just requires somebody to want to do it.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, like the one thing I'll give, you know, I still have a lot of respect from where it all started. And I think it allowed, you know, certain people to think differently and branch off of different ways to do things. And I know we've been talking about, athletes, but like I live in the world of everyday people, and that's even more having to think of a program that builds you up and doesn't break you down, thinking about many different schedules. I always use this like bad analogy, but I mean, like we wake up, most I guess people that get into this wake up thinking they're going to be Tom Brady's trainer, getting them peaking for the next season, right? And then you realize that you know, your general clients, Brady Tom, that works at Bank of America. And that's a very different way that you have to approach that training program. So, I mean, we do very well with a 25 to 45 year old high performing individual, but they're still like everyday people and people past their sport that are just looking to age athletically. They're not trying to make camp anymore, and they're not sleeping the way they used to be able to sleep or eating the way they used to sleep. I have a 9 and a 12 year old. I know you mentioned your girls, two boys. I mean, life gets busy. Yeah. So you got bringing these things into, you know, pop culture fitness, you got to think about a lot of these things, and it's a lot simpler than it is. It's not this like very, very diverse variety and endless variety and fucking 15 to 30 different movements per, I mean, all that stuff is just so overrated. So we've tried to just create a more structured version of that in the middle of this pop culture playland.
You know where that comes from. Remember Tony Horton's Muscle Confusion?
Oh man.
That's I think where a lot of this comes from. If you want to get really strong, it's really boring. Like Jim Wendler wrote a program, it was called Big But Boring. And I always thought that was extremely insightful. Like, hey, this is a boring program, but you're going to get bigger and stronger. Like it doesn't have to be overly complex. And I think what happened with CrossFit is they added complexity to make it novel. It was just a novelty. You know, they wanted to, you know, be able to shoot YouTube videos of girls doing cool things. And that's how they ended up driving part of their marketing was a lot of this kind of like, not tricks, but just very specific type movements that benefited certain people. And that's where they really dug in a lot. And even to the point where, you know, back in the day, we used to have, you know, kind of our CrossFit basic movements. So, I mean, there were pieces of CrossFit that we were asked to kind of... well, let me just talk to you from a branding point because you'll understand this from a branding point. You know, CrossFit's increased work capacity, broad time, modal domains, functional movements performed at high intensity. Like those are their brand tenets. Yep. They asked me to do CrossFit football, which the first word is CrossFit, second bowl is football, which it was a terrible fucking name. They wanted, I was like, dude, people aren't going to get it. They're going to think we're going to have footballs and pads. And Glassman's like, no, they'll get it because you played football. They didn't get it.
Yeah.
But what was even weirder was they were asking me to run with a brand that didn't have any of the tenets of their brand. That'd be like if you all of, you know, Metabolic, like now all of a sudden somebody comes in and you license somebody to use Metabolic and they show up to the gym and they're doing Zumba and Pilates.
Yes.
And you're like, while I appreciate Zumba and Pilates, that's not within our ethos. That's not within our branding guidelines. And if anything, this is predatory upon your brand. So, you know, I come in and we're, you know, forging powerful athletes and, you know, working on this thing that's not increased work capacity, broad time, modal domains, right? It's very specific time domains, basic movements. And we even stepped away from movements to the point where it became based upon movement, you know, seven planes, you know, three planes of motion, seven primal movements, your ability to move through space, you know, step, squat, and lunge, vertical push, vertical pull, and then developed, you know, their definition of fitness. And I defined athleticism as the ability to, what is it? I'm going to fuck this up. The ability to seamlessly and effortlessly combine primal movement patterns through space to accomplish a known or novel task. I haven't had to drop that one in a while.
But I was going to say that was pretty wordy. That's impressive.
Yeah. You can tell how many times I've done that in the talk, right? So all of these kind of pieces of CrossFit, because one of the things that when Glassman originally pitched me on this, he asked me to help them develop their technology and how to train athletes. And that was a really fascinating term to me because I had never thought about training as a technology. Uh-huh. And one of the things I stewed on for a long period of time was like, what's CrossFit's technology? Increase work capacity, right? Like if you can do a little bit more tomorrow than you did today, you're moving towards their version of fitness. And their definitions were self-serving. Uh-huh. So in a way I looked at it and it's like, you know, that's an interesting piece. And then one day I had a revelation that what I was training for was athleticism. And what's difficult about athleticism is you can't quantify it, but you see it when it happens. Like, you know, this, like I'm not a Ferrari guy, but if I hear a front engine V12 Ferrari go by, I can hear the sound and I know exactly what that car is. And I know exactly what it will look like. Just like you can watch somebody take a step and run and do stuff. And instantly you are taken into this moment. You're like, oh shit, that person moves really well. They're doing something different that nobody else can do. And that's how we define athleticism. It's through the eye. Cause we, you know, if you think we're hardwired for symmetry. So when you see symmetry and movement and beauty, I mean, it's just a really simple deal. And I had this like revelation. I was like, fuck, that's what we've been training for. So now we have to create a system that fosters and develops athleticism by breaking down athleticism. And it started with a definition. So I took a lot from what CrossFit did in terms of like their architecture on how they kind of created this thing. The problem is I didn't like the pieces of the house. And I had the ability to run a seminar, you know, CrossFit football we brought up. I taught a seminar, hundreds of seminars all around the globe for 9 years. And I would have people show up that had just done CrossFit, and I have people show up that had done my training, and other people that had not done any of it. And basically got to put them through a 2-day testing diagnostic. And it was amazing. The people that had done regular CrossFit could not sprint. Like the injuries when we did any resistance running, any change of directions, like it was a broken system of training because, you know, they had almost sold these people a little bit of a lie that, oh, if your work capacity is high and you go hard, you'll be able to do anything. Remember the age old, like we can do your stuff better than you, but you can't do our stuff. Remember all that bullshit? Yeah, no, that didn't make sense.
No, it didn't.
And, but there were a lot of tricks that they, you know, like I said, the best trick the devil ever played was convincing the world it didn't exist. They sold a lot of tricks, and we would have these people show up and they'd get fucking shattered into a million pieces. And they'd say, where do I start? And I'm like, well, you're gonna have to rebuild, you know, you're gonna have to do something smarter, a little bit better. And you're gonna have to have attention to detail. Just making your high watermark emotional intensity is a fucking bad place to be. So that's where the analogy of trying to remove people from a burning house came from. And I think everybody that did it long enough that had no vested interest in their own financial growth through CrossFit, like i.e. they weren't employed by CrossFit or in some weird financial relationship with Glassman and the fucking Martians, saw this. And the people that had some financial vested, like, you know, reason in CrossFit, they were either on HQ's payroll or they were this, fought it. Like, what are you talking about? And you're like, what the oh, you get paid. Okay, I get it, why you're doing this. And
What I thought was funny is, and you talk about the big bad word CrossFit football. When I sat through the original and comparing the two, I'm like, the big bad wolf is actually a more scalable, doable program that, this is the dangerous one over here. Yeah. This has some structure that you can actually build people up, and it has, and I get it. Like you already said it. Like I get that if you followed the original WMG model, like showing up on a Friday for a 5x5 back squat might not be a sexy business model. I get it.
Yeah.
But if they would have stayed true to the methodology, I think it had more of a scalable way you could have done it. But all of a sudden we were doing the filthy 50 every day, and it was, you know, it was just, I mean, we could probably talk about this forever. The one thing I wanted to say that I thought was hilarious, that original definition, constantly varied functional fitness performed at high intensity. Well, when we left the world to create what we were doing, I actually used to use that against what we were going to do. I'm like, if CrossFit is this, you know, we would be carefully structured strength bias interval training at varied intensities. Simple. I just kind of use the words against one another. And that's actually who we are today. Like it's so funny when in this like influencer driven and boutique booming nature, I feel like every company is trying to like expand their thinking. When I noticed us over 10 years, everything's getting smaller and smaller and smaller. We're doing less than we are doing more. We're just doing what works more often.
Sure. Well, I mean, fuck, dude, that's intelligence, right? I mean, if you think about like lean manufacturing models, what they're constantly looking to do is like, you know, or the my favorite analogy is when I look at people's programming, people are like, hey, I'm going to do this, and they send it to me. It reminds me of like the Christmas tree you've had for 10 years. So you remember like, you know, you first get your Christmas tree, there's a couple ornaments, 10 years later, it's just covered in shit. Yep. And so what we do is periodically, we throw out like, I remember we'll always get a fresh tree. And then we decided, you know, we don't want fresh trees anymore. So I bought a big like white fake flock tree, and we got rid of all our ornaments and went, you know, with like all red ones and then this, and now we've kind of added back. And so you have to periodically throw everything away. And yep. Go back to the simplicity and see what you really like. And I think what happens over time, you just keep adding ornaments to the Christmas tree. And that's what training looks like, especially a lot of programs. When I look at them, I'm just like, too many ornaments. There's too much stuff. Like yeah. I can't even see the, you know, the function and what you're trying to do. And more importantly, what you want to accomplish. And I think what happens to, and you know, this for the novelty for your trainer, for your clients, they like, maybe they need that, I don't know, the ADD model of, you know, new shit all the time. And they're like, you know, what are we going to do today? Same thing we do every day, Pinky, try to take over the world, you know? And, you know, the only thing, this is something I've been going with a couple of my fighters, because I work with some pro BJJ guys. They'll go train somewhere and they're like, oh man, we did this thing called battling ropes. And I was like, oh really? Did you have fun? Yeah, it was great. You know, it was pretty hard. Then you should go do it the next day. And then over the course of like a week, they're like, yeah, we did it every day. It wasn't very hard on day five. And I was like, oh, okay. So like, that's a good marker. The only thing in training that never got easy is the weights never got light. Sprinting never got easy. And if you don't do them regularly, they forget your name to the point where you look at those things and you're like, fuck you. I can't believe I've lifted these weights my whole life and these things have forgotten me this quick. They have no memory. And if you can do something and you can walk away for a few days, like, you know, doing interval sprints on the Echo bike. What's another one? Like hill sprints. I mean, shit that like, if you don't do it periodically, just to remind yourself how awful it is, it come back and gets you to the point where you like sit down and you're like having to rethink your life and your existence.
My business partner's son is a pretty talented soccer player. I think he's about 16 and he's trying to, you know, get him to take training more seriously. So he just mentioned to me the other day that he took him for hill sprints for his first time doing them in a few years. He's been crippled for about a week since then, which I thought was hilarious.
Dude, there's nothing like, hey, I'm going to show these kids how to do this. We had, you know, yesterday was Wade's day, in memory of Wade DeBruin. So we were over at our buddy's gym on Saturday and they had like a big Wade's wad deal. And my daughters didn't want to do it. So I was like, hey, let's do something else. So I made him go get kettlebells and he had a couple Echo bikes. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to swing 15. And while I swing those 15, you got to ride the bike. And then when you get off, you go, we went just back and forth. I think we did it for like 14 minutes. So it was seven rounds. The look on their face at like 6 or 7 minutes in was like, I could see their eyes get lit up and they like kind of got in that like fight or flight and I could see their cheeks getting all flush. And I was like, oh, this is good. And we got done and they were like, you know, that didn't seem to really bother you. And I'm like, yeah, no, because I do this shit all the time. And on top of it, my entire goal is to poker face you to the point where, you know, and that's what we did in CrossFit and everything. When we trained, like the goal was to make sure to have people think that like this wasn't bothering us. And so the girls got a little dose of that. But you always remember, man, like the gift of training and the gift of fitness and like the gift of strength are gifts that you give people because it's very rare that people find them on their own.
Yeah. And that's so a good way to put it.
You know, and it's like, you know, let me give you this gift. And then once you kind of understand how to use this gift, I can kind of mentor and nurture it, but they have to decide that they want it. And I remember, and dude, I've told the story fucking endlessly on this podcast, but I had a few simple moments in my life when I was probably 10, 11 years old where I knew I wanted to lift weights. I went to go play football because I knew that there were big dudes in there lifting weights and I wasn't exactly sure what they were doing, but I knew that they were either getting big through osmosis or they just were doing something that big dudes were doing this, so I was going to do it. And I fell in and liked the training and liked the violence and it just kind of like I felt like I was home. Like there has never been a weight room. And I have the rare distinction. I mean, maybe Bergner and Kelly Starrett and a few others around the world had the rare distinction to be able to walk into a gym on a Saturday morning across the globe from the Arctic Circle in New Zealand and all the way back, walk in and have 30, 40 people waiting for you that you get to fucking literally beat the dog shit out of for 2 days.
Yeah.
And they were excited to take a picture and leave. And like, I can walk into the point where that smell, like the adrenaline, the fear, all these things, you walk in and you're like, it's gonna be a good fucking day. And I've always loved that.
That's super cool. Yeah. That is super cool.
Well, it was like, that's probably for me with Power Athlete. I'm not going to like equate it to this, but I'm super fascinated by these AI models. So we're actually at the point now where like AI is going to be able to use AI. Like I think it's probably within the next year. So now you can sit down and tell AI to do something and then it's going to be able to pull up like, hey, design me this. And it's going to be able to use all these tools. So it's actually going to be, I forgot the word they had for it, but it's basically like a thinking AI. And even though it feels like an oxymoron, but many times that's what we did with the program because we were giving free programming away and then traveling and meeting the people doing the program and putting them through these diagnostics. We just got a chance to train thousands of people in real time and see what worked and what didn't and what people did. And I mean, and it was really powerful for power athlete. And I know it sounds funny, but to be able to do that and meet the people and kind of do this, it allows you to kind of develop things at such a faster rate where now when people ask me about it, I'm like, no, we figured this shit out. While you were sitting there maybe training one or two people, I was literally testing the stuff on thousands of people around the globe. And everybody that did the stuff got a general response. It's probably similar for your gyms. You know, you create a methodology, you see what works, and now all of a sudden, as you kind of are building these little, you know, microcosms around, I mean, how many locations are you guys at now?
We're at 36 today. The next 90 days is going to be nuts. We're opening 7 in the next 90 days. And it was, and by the way, it's not this like huge, crazy growth. It's just the way construction happened in this year. And they all just landed in this one area. But, it's kind of like you said, like we have some people coming from other good programs or, you know, good colleges with the right kind of degrees. But to your point, I always say to people, the only reason I can lecture today is because I've seen tens of thousands of people move from all different backgrounds, different sets of injuries, different drives within them. So it's going to take you time to learn how to see movement correctly and just be patient with it. Like, you know, so I agree. It's like a crash course, being able to see so many people move. And then also too, like in a franchise model, you know, there's only so much you can control. You know, a lot of people think it's just this very straightforward, you can't step outside the lines, but the reality is it's a business within a business. And there's like some non-negotiables you can hold people to, but you can't hire for a franchisee. Like we can interview and say, you know, I don't think this person's ready, blah, blah, blah. But they could say, you know, Brandon, I think you're full of shit and I'm going to hire them. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is their business. So like a lot of times, even this thing that me and my co-founder dreamt up over a decade ago, people ask me like, what do you do all day? Like, what do you do? I'm like, my goal is to make sure that 90% of what I dreamt up stays in place as we go to scale here. But knowing that there are strategic risks, there are things that come along with growth and, you know, my goal is to keep as much intact as you can as you hit different markets.
How did you kind of assess? I mean, where did you open your first location? Was it in Southern California?
No, Charlotte, North Carolina, where I live today. Yeah. Okay. So this is where I retired when I was playing. The Charlotte Checkers were part of the New York Rangers farm system. Mm-hmm. So I had a good minor league career here. You know, I was a player that people like to watch. So, you know, part of doing that, you know, a lot of people, you have connections. I didn't go to college. I went right from major junior in Canada, right to professional. So like I needed to lean on that relationship with the city, and the city's grown up a lot. I love it here. And this is kind of where we started. We never thought of a franchise model, like, you know, driven by a lot of ego. I looked at what was happening in Charlotte. I'm like, I think we can own the city pretty easily. Let's do this. And then people just started asking, like, would you ever consider this in X or Y? And fuck, we were like, I don't know how we can afford to do that. You know, that's a lot of capital to put out in cities with partners we don't know. And then at some point we were introduced to, have you ever thought about franchising the concept? Mm-hmm. Okay, let's look into that. And, you know, you just kind of keep your feet moving forward. You figure shit out on the fly. And obviously 10 years later, it's a well-oiled machine, but yeah, that's just kind of how it started.
So give me a, like, walk me through the model. You know, I do know a fair amount about franchises and the difference between affiliates and franchises in this. So like kind of explain to me like the branding and the model and like, you know, somebody shows up and they want to, you know, potentially open one of these, like what does that like, you know, target market locations, like size, equipment, like just take me through like the, you know?
Yeah. So we're a lot pickier than some of the powerhouses that everyone would know, say an F45 or Orange Theory and that side of things. And the main reason is like we thrive with a 25 to 45 year old, like high performer, you know, that it's very different than your casual exerciser. So,
well, what's the sales pitch? Like, I mean, okay, like if I sit down and I have a CrossFit gym, I have F45, I have Orange Theory, and I have Metabolic, like what is the deciding factor, the differentiation in the model that separates that person, like the chef from the wheat?
Yeah, so ask this question a lot. You know, me, how I sell it could be different because I have to meet that person where they are. If they're a fan of CrossFit and still drinking the Kool-Aid, I have to lean into that a bit. If they, you know, if they're an uneducated person that goes to an Orange Theory but enjoys it, you know, I have to educate them a specific way. It's kind of funny. CrossFit's really no longer in this conversation. I mean, they always had a very loud bark, but a very small bite, like within the fitness industry in general. So, like, we hang out with Orange Theories, F45s, Rumble Boxing, ISI, kind of looped into that world. The biggest difference in that world is we are very strength biased. So, when we build our programs, we lead with strength and sprinkle in athleticism around it. So, where our competitors may have, I don't know, 40, 50 pounds on the floor. Like we do have 100-pound kettlebells and 100-pound dumbbells.
As you should.
Yeah.
As you should. I mean, that's how fucking I rate gyms. If I walk in and they got a bunch of like the heaviest dumbbells they have is 50, I walk out. I'm like, get the fuck out of
Yeah.
here.
Save big on your Thanksgiving feast. All in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound packs of juicy Kroger red, green, or black seedless grapes for $3.99 with your card and a digital coupon. Then get 1-pound packs of flavorful Private Selection 80% lean Angus ground chuck for $4.99 each with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is Scott Campbell from the Stupid Things for Love podcast. I have a 7-year-old son, and the biggest mountain I climb every day is trying to put shoes on this child. And I'm so grateful to Skechers for making the only shoes my son will willingly put on by himself. Their slip-ons are amazing, and he doesn't have to deal with laces. He doesn't have to deal with anything. They come in the perfect color blue. Thank you, Skechers, the comfort technology company. And you can find Skechers everywhere. Skechers.com, a Skechers store, or wherever stylish footwear is sold.
And then the biggest thing that's harder to kind of translate because the uneducated consumer doesn't know any better. And by the way, when I say that, I'm not saying you're like, this is a dumb person. I'm meaning this isn't your life. This isn't what you do. Like, we're known for training. Like, our trainers are not here to entertain you. They're here to actually train you. We have 5 movements a day. Our trainers are tasked to actually train people. They're not running around with microphones on, high-fiving people. Like, we're actually known for the strength bias of the program and the one-on-one attention to detail. The harder thing to explain, which becomes the result of the program, as best we can, we actually try to periodize workouts for a giant population. So we take the calendar year and break it down into 12-week cycles. And those 12-week cycles have 2-week micro cycles. Every 13th week is an unloaded deload week. And what clients find is they see the response of their progress and not being injured and all that stuff and them feeling better. But it's not something I can throw on a fucking billboard and people come sprinting into the doors in the world that kind of I live in. So the overall pitch, to be honest, we're just extremely better than anyone we compete with in this space. And it's not that simple. It's a very hard thing to say. And I get slapped over the head for saying this all the time. But who I have to compete with, they can't hold our jock strap. It just really is that simple. That does not mean it's going to print more money than an F45. And the way I always say this is there are a lot of people that need to have a high five and a motivational workout. And that's the thing that gets them moving. I'm completely okay with that. And I can sell that all day long. In my opinion, it's extremely busy. Everything from cycle to yoga to HIIT concepts, everyone's chasing that same consumer. It's more of a shotgun approach, making a lot of people happy. So we just try to target the high performer. We seem to do well 25 to 45, and we cater everything we do to that person and speak to them only.
I also feel like you're talking about a more educated consumer. We ran into this a lot. I mean, and it sounds like a very similar market for, you know, kind of the people we work with. it was very rare that we got like the initial CrossFitter or kind of the person that was like, this is their first kind of dance in the fitness space. We got people that had kind of like had done something, had seen it, and then realized like, ah, this isn't what I like. And then we kind of get those people that are a lot more educated, because I don't necessarily have to sell people on strength training. If I have to come in, and I'm sure the same thing runs in, I mean, you're looking at 25 to 45 year old people that are probably former ex-athletes that have tried a lot of different things and are realizing that they're all about the same, but something's different here. And you don't probably have to sell them on, hey, we're going to make you really strong and we're going to lift weights and we're going to move and we're going to treat you like a person that's competing for something or needs to at a moment's hat. I mean, which is, I feel like once you've been an athlete, even though maybe you're not presently doing something athletic, there is this like deal in the back of your head. You're like, oh, I could go do that. I mean, this happened to me with jujitsu. You know, obviously I retired and I was training and then I started working with these pro BJJ guys and they invited me and was like, hey, you should come in. And I was like, yeah, fuck it. I can come do this. And so I've been training for 2 years and people are like, yeah, I mean, I, you know, some days I get to go 3-4 days a week. Sometimes I go once, because unfortunately I have a job and kids and all this other podcasts. That tend to take up a little bit of time, but I still go in there and I can move and do all these things. And the only reason that I'm able to is because of the things that I did in the past and things I presently do. And it doesn't look like fucking flopping around like a fish after a workout, you know, and make sure everybody's really strong, move well, throw the med ball, swing the kettlebells, like push sleds. I mean, all the stuff we do in the training, aerobic capacity. I mean, all of these things allow me to go out and do what I want, which is, you know, go out and compete with guys half my age and still do pretty well. So I think that like in the back of your head, now whether or not you decide to act on it is something that every athlete should have. Like if I can get back in shape or even a little bit in shape or even get kind of close, I can still go out and do this. And like, that's the ego part. And if you get to the point where you can't, then you need to fucking put it in reverse, go back and figure out how to get there. A lot of times I have guys, you know, at JITS that'll come over and, hey, you know, I'm really getting into this. And I really like, what do you think? And I'm like, you know, have you ever done anything athletic before? And this one fucking blows my mind. When obviously you meet a 40-year-old dude that's like, no, I've never done anything athletic. And I'm like, this is what you decided? You've never lifted weights. You've never trained. 40 years old, you're here. Welcome to the fucking party. Yeah. I get that with lifting weights. We're like, oh man, I just started lifting weights. I'm like, no shit, really? I had a guy tell me the other day at my son's school. He came to our birthday party or my son's birthday party and it was at my house. So we have a ranch and I have a building with a big gym. And so we got like a big bounce house outside and a bunch of kids came and his dad came in and they like saw the gym and he's like, I can't believe you have this in your house. I'm like, well, it's not in my house. It's up near my house. And we started talking about training and he had never trained. And then I hadn't seen him. That would have been in March. And then I saw him the other day and he had lost 40 pounds and he looked great. And he's like, man, I've been going to the Y lifting weights. And he's like, man, I feel great. Like I just never, I never knew this was out there. So it's crazy to me that guys in their, you know, 40s are finding this stuff and they understand the value. I love it. I like, and there's kind of a little bit of, I think in the strength training community, there's a lot of people that are like, you know, get on the lifeboat and they want to pull the ladder up on people. And I always think that's so stupid. I'm like, dude, leave that motherfucker down. We get more adopters. We get more people on this thing. Why shame people that didn't find it as early? I mean, you know, same in the JITS thing, you know, people act very elitist in that, but I'm like, hey, not everybody finds this shit at the same time. And when you do that to people, it makes them not want to support your community, which invariably ends up weakening your community.
Yeah. And I think there's a really unique opportunity for us right now because finally the world is talking about strength training. Like we didn't exactly plan for this, especially in the boutique space, right? But it's becoming more trendy. It's becoming the thing that people want to do. And I think we're very well positioned. I think the unique thing is going to be, I'm 43 today. And I say that we do well with the 25 to 45 year old, right? But we're also having like people my age and my co-founder's age that they came through kind of the CrossFit world or time or, and now they're noticing like they're not going to go back to the treadmill at 50, 55.
Yeah.
So I think like our reach is going to slowly extend, especially in men, which I'm very excited about. Because I grew up in a very athletic kind of like house. My parents were athletic, but they were from the cardio generation. I mean, my dad's been running his knees off
jogging
for years.
Yeah, it's the fucking 80s. I remember my parents had like jogging suits, and they would like jog. And I fucking would want to stab myself in the forehead if my wife and I went out and did jogging.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think it's a good time. I do, here's the thing I will admit to. I think with the allure of growth, I think we need to get back to more of what we're talking about today. You know, at times we've taken strategic risks to be like, maybe we should try that slower market and see if our consumer is there or not there. Actually, I shouldn't even say that. We kind of know based on like psychographic mapping software of where we should and shouldn't be and stuff like that. But I think to see how big you could take this model, you do need to take some strategic risks. And one of the things we are noticing now is 2025, we're going to reintroduce the world to what Metabolic really is. And it's going to be very, very targeting that high performer, being very strength bias. If anything, we're going to go more towards strength versus like where in the past we've tried to add in some things, maybe to make it more inclusive, to use an overturned word or overused term. Sorry. But yeah, I'm proud at the 36 units. We should be at 50 by Q2 of next year. But I honestly think probably the next 12 to 18 months are going to be our big years to make some noise. So I'm excited to see where it goes.
Yeah. No, I don't think that there's ever I don't think there's ever been a time where strength training feels like more mainstream. I always felt it was kind of niche. I mean, obviously I did it because, I wanted to lift weights, but also it was the vehicle for me to play football. But I always wanted to be big and strong. But I felt like if you were big and strong like that, it was because you were using it for a reason. Like you were either a football player, professional athlete, or maybe a aspiring bodybuilder. Now it's like normal people are jacked. And I meet people all the time. You're out and we were somewhere and a girl started talking to me about strength training, like about lifting weights. She's like, "You lift weights?" I'm like, "Do you?" She's like, "Yeah." And I was like, "Do you do anything?" She's like, "No, I just want to be jacked." I hear that more and more, that people want to be in good shape because, and I'll let you in on a kind of an interesting conversation I had. Do you know who Adil Khan is? Dr. Adil Khan. He's Tony Robbins' doctor. He's now the doctor for the Saudi royal family. So I had him on the podcast. He's a buddy of ours. I went down and did a podcast with him down in Mexico with Chris Duffin. And then Duffin fucking had an abortion of a setup and lost the entire thing. So if you know Chris, it's fucking par for the course. Like his fucking literally had like 7 computers that were all melting down at once. And I was like, we're going to have to redo this motherfucker. And I even said to him, "Hey dude, do you want me to bring my guide? Like I'll bring our cameras. I'll bring the crew." No, I got it. Right. He didn't have it. So, he has, this big kind of his company's Eterna. He has this, life kind of like longevity live forever conference here in Austin earlier this year. And, it was pretty cool. 'Cause he brought in some really, really fucking high end people. And they talked about, the genetic stuff they're doing. They're doing like this gene therapy, gene modifications, foliostatin. And one of the cool talks was, based upon the genetics and the way our genes kind of express, we can make it to about 120 years is about where our cap is. The problem though, is anybody that lives to be 120 is a fucking 120, which nobody wants to be 120. Everybody wants to be 120, but like I am when I'm 30, 40, or 50, right? Like, as long as you're pretty fit. So their deal is to get you to 120, but allow you to physically be like you are, in your 30s and 40s and 50s. Wow. So that's kind of their whole play. But the problem that they run into is what's preventing people from getting there is all the common all-cause mortality, which, most men either die of cancer, heart attack, or some form of stroke or, something. So if they can remove the cancer killer, the heart attacks and the strokes, you're pretty clear sailing. And then another interesting piece was, they said that from people that are from, Northern kind of, Caucasian white kind of Northern European descent, kind of stop aging after about the age of 90. So if they can get to 90 pretty healthy, there's no really genetic physical difference between a 90 and 100-year-old. So they just kind of like stop aging, which is fucking kind of wild because...
That is wild.
Yeah. So they just kind of stop aging. And then the problem, though, is why do they all die? They don't die from these like new, you know, this all-cause mortality. They fall and break a hip or something because they're feeble. So the idea of like strength training and training and kind of going through this whole thing. But as we are at this event, it's attracted a lot of high net worth individuals. I think I forgot the number, but in the United States, what there's like, I don't know, maybe there's more, maybe there's like a couple hundred billionaires, maybe 100 billionaires. I think like 11 of them were in that room.
Oh, wow.
So after we get done, and I work as a consultant for one of those guys locally, and I help him with his training, and he likes fitness technologies, and he's kind of hired me to kind of create this vertical integration model to kind of help him. So it's kind of interesting for me. If I can't go hang out with a guy who's a billionaire a couple days a week, and you know, what the fuck am I going to do, right?
That's right.
So we go to this big, I don't want the story to be too much longer, but we go to this big like cocktail party right after and like meeting everybody. And I'm sitting there at the bar and this guy rolls up on me and he's like pretty like normally kind of fit Indian cat. And we were kind of rapping and he's like, oh, I run a big hedge fund in this. And he's basically, he's one of these, you know, billionaires. And as we were talking, he said, you know, 10 or 15 years ago, it was all about who had like the coolest jet. So everybody had like their own personal jet and this, and we get all these interiors and do shit. And then NetJets came, and now we have NetJets because you can get whatever jet you need. It's got a different tail number so that people can't track you. And he's like, only people with big egos, like, you know, the Taylor Swifts of the world want to have a tail fin that somebody can check on them. So he's like, now, then it became cars. After you buy all the cars, like what's left? You know, you got Andrew Tate over there with all these fucking cars. He can have it. He's like, I drive a Tesla. He said, the greatest flex in the world now is being in shape and being fit. He's like, look at Zuckerberg. He was a total fucking nerd. He starts getting in, and next thing you know, he buys a surfing property, and Kai Lenny and those guys teach him to surf, and then Dave Camarillo teaches some jits, and he's doing some MMA stuff. Next thing you know, he looks pretty good. He's like kind of fit. He's got this, and he got in shape. And you notice that like Jeff Bezos got jacked. All these guys. So now the flex isn't who has the best jets, who has the best cars, all that other shit. The flex is who can be the fittest dude and also who can live the longest. So who's going to be the healthiest, the longevity, and all the other pieces? And that's why those guys were there. And he's like, you know, it was funny. He's like, man, I know you figured this out. And I'm like, yeah, I wish I'd figured out how to be a billionaire earlier that we could have this conversation. But the guy wanted to talk to me about training and nutrition. And we went down this whole thing. And I was like, man, this is so interesting for what was, you know, when I told my dad I wanted to lift weights and do all this stuff, he was like, why are you going to do that? Idiots count lift weights. Counting to 10 over and over again. Morons do it. And I'm like, no, Dad, this can be pretty good. And then when I signed my second contract in the NFL, I bought him a twin turbo Porsche. And I remember slipping the keys across. And I was like, weightlifting, lifting weights. This is what it fucking buys you, a Porsche.
That's fucking awesome.
But that's that was really interesting to me that like these guys, like that's the flex, man. And I think what you're kind of catching that a little bit similar to like us. I mean, you know, we really service that the garage gym, kind of the guy that built the, you know, custom gym at his house and wants to go in and do the best training he can and still wants to be very similar market. That flex of like being fit, being shape, the age old, I might be a billionaire, but I'm fat as shit and I'm kind of a fucking slob. Like that doesn't pay anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, even to the point where like my client who's 72, he's like, dude, I want to be super fit. I want to be able to go and walk and do all these things. And he's like, I want to be like as fit as I can. I want to be the most fit 70-year-old guy I can. And he has access to do whatever he wants. And I'm like, fucking, I'm in for it if you want to do it. And he trains his ass off. So it's neat that it's finally taken this time to get into mainstream. I wonder if it's the social media, like the vanity piece, or people realize that just everything seems to work better when the organism's a little stronger.
Yeah, we've just gotten smarter. And I'm hoping the next 10 years it keeps going. Like I still sadly deal with post-concussion syndrome. So like,
do you really
want to, one of my,
like
what?
Like here, because I have, a total fucking, program on how to fix all that shit. So the part of my brain that was damaged was up here to the point where
so I got hit here and then the back of my skull bruised in kind of that V vision area in the cortex. And so like my symptoms are, and this is the worst thing about it, and you could imagine, it's related to exertion. So like I actually can't even do our own classes because I have to kind of be like at a 1-to-3 work to rest ratio. I can't take my pulse above 70-80%. And if it's almost like filling up a gas tank. And if you hold it too long, it overflows and it just kind of spills all over everywhere. And that film is all in my head. Mm-hmm. I've been dealing with it for almost 20 years now, or 15 years. So
what have you done to fix it?
I mean, I've worked with every doctor, chiropractic, neurologist.
What were the treatments?
I've had some intense psilocybin. Western, Eastern.
So the two things that really fixed me, the part of my brain that was damaged was over here on the left frontal lobe. When I retired and I was in Dr. Amon's study, the one big thing that really helped me was hyperbarics. So the hyperbaric chambers. We had a guy named Dr. Joe DiRudi on the podcast. He's like the Navy's expert and like he's the fucking... the foremost expert in the world. My wife always says, I say that I'm like, no, Dr. Joe's legitimately the fucking
guy.
He's
the best.
Yeah. I mean, he's Dr. Deep Sea, lived like under the water for 100 days. And like if you Google him, you'll find out he's the best. The hyperbaric treatment and the way he prescribed it, about 20 sessions, it was pretty life-changing. I went and did the 40 sessions. It was 8 weeks, 5 days a week. You know, it took about 2 hours. I go at 7 a.m, get done. You know, it was an hour on the bottom, 15 up, 15 down. So about 90 minutes. If I am able to figure out how I can do it and I'm waiting on this, I will have a hyperbaric chamber in my house and I will sleep in that thing every day. I will get into it every day. So really? So what happens with the hyperbarics is when you go down to like, let's say 2 atmospheres, your body no longer needs hemoglobin to move oxygen around the brain. And through the body. So it absorbs into the plasma. So it oxygenates parts of the body that have never been oxygenated. And then it also has about 1 million other things that are extremely healing, especially for the brain. So that big one. And then the other one was high dose exosomes. So I was out in Arizona after having a shoulder surgery and I went to go see my buddy, Tom Inkledon. And there's other people that do it, but like Doc Hughes, our buddy out in California that does it. Tom does it in Arizona. Tom's like, hey, we have this new, deal that we're using. What they found was that when they were doing stem cells, they would wash the stem cells and all the genetic garbage that they were pulling away. They started looking at it. It was actually all the RNA and it was how the stem cells talk to each other were the exosomes. And they're very small. Like they move across the blood brain barrier. They're very tiny. And he's like, you know, we're getting some really good results on healing with these exosomes. And I was like, well, juice them up. So he put them in my shoulder and he shot me this big, you know, trillions IV of exosomes. And, it was about 8 or 9 a.m. by about 5 o'clock that night, we were sitting there, we went to dinner and, like, you know, that buzz feeling after you have like one drink, you know, where all of a sudden you're a little more talkative. It's like a little bit of grease. I mean, I know you're Canadian, you know exactly. And you played hockey. So you know exactly what I'm talking about.
I do.
And, I looked and I was like, we haven't had a drink. He's like, no, like, why is it? I'm like, I have this weird buzzy feeling. Like we've had a drink and that didn't leave me for like 6 months.
Wow.
And it wired up whatever was broken, and it moved across the blood-brain barrier. I think it reduced some inflammation in my brain. So I think the combination of not only the hyperbarics with the exosomes was a big one. Also, I think I'm the longest continuous creatine user on the planet. I started taking creatine when I was 14. Now the creatine stuff, I've been saying this for years. Now everybody's coming out and they're finally like, oh yeah. Trying to put out all this stuff. Now I've been saying this ATP. It's like the second like mitochondrial system, like what that does for brain health and especially pushing it out to like 20 grams a day. So I'll do like 210, I guess it's, 210 gram scoops. Has been extremely helpful. So I think that between the creatine and those, and then we had a guy on the podcast, Dr. Eric Wan, who's got something called the Brain Research Center down in San Diego. And he has this Magnin helmet that he sent to me and also to Nick Hardwick. And that helmet...
Nick, did you say Nick Hardwick?
Yeah.
Oh my God. My sister's best friend is his wife, JB Hardwick.
Yeah.
That is wild.
Yeah. Jamie.
That is crazy.
Yeah. So Nick was on the podcast. I mean, funny story. So when I was living in Newport Beach, I've worked as a contractor for Naval Special Warfare for years. And a bunch of the guys kept coming up to Newport because they were in this DOD study that was doing brain scans, these EEGs, looking for like a specific brain type for like, they called it operator brain. So they were trying to do this DOD study to scan all these guys to see if they could like pre-select if there was like one brain type. So after about the third time these guys came up, we'd go out drinking. And then like one of the times I was like, I want to go meet these people. So I went over to Newport, and this is in Newport when I lived there, and met this guy, Dr. Jin, who was doing this study. And he's like, oh, we have one for professional athletes too. Would you be in our study? And I was like, yeah, sure. So he went in and scanned my brain, and shocker, I had the certain brain type that they were looking for. But he also was able to kind of corroborate the testing that Dr. Amen had done, where like the damage was up here on the left side of my brain. So for the next, you know, 10 years, I, you know, did everything from, you know, ketogenic diets to, you know, every and anything you could ever imagine. I'm sure you have too. And, so Nick calls me and goes, hey, I'm coming to Austin for South by. I'm speaking on a panel on brain health. Would you come? And I was like, yeah, one of the things I hate about ex-professional athletes is they're the flakiest fucking people on the planet. So what I do is to combat the flakiness of pro athletes. If somebody calls and asks me to do something, I'm like, yes, man. I'm like, dude, I'll be there. You know, if you need me to support you, I'm happy to be there. So he comes out, he goes and, you know, was on this brain panel, and this guy's speaking. I'm like, fuck, man, I've heard this before. So I go over and I talk to the doc at the end, and I was like, hey, this sounds really familiar to this work this doctor in Newport Beach was doing at the Brain Research Center. He goes, oh, no, that's us. I'm in charge now. Dr. Jin's retired. So he goes, so I told him, and he goes, oh man, come tomorrow. I want to rescan your brain. So he, I go the next day, he rescans my brain, and he was able to pull my old scan from 10 years previous. And in the 10 years that he scanned me, is not only did I fix the brain damage, like no evidence of it, but not only was the peak and the EEG, like my peak was actually higher, sharper, and had gone back in time. So I'd found a way to de-age my brain. So he's like, in 10 years, you've not only fixed your brain damage, you figured out how to de-age your brain and make it more efficient and move faster. Like, what have you done? And I laid it all out, and I've laid it out on this podcast, and I'll still get people email, be like, hey, can you send me that information? I'm like, just listen to the fucking podcast. But
I'd love the link for it because.
Well, dude, when we get done with this, like we'll connect on email, and I'll basically just shoot you all the contacts on this stuff. Cool. I think the problem, and this is with the brain, is they kind of give you this feeling of like, oh, you know, you have to do all this. I mean, I think the high dose psilocybin stuff is really interesting, especially for like emotional. You know, we did a series of podcasts on like psychedelics with, what was his name? Dr. Dan. Remember his name? Dan, I can't remember. This is another one of my problems. But we had like the expert on that. I mean, so I think there's a lot of stuff, but I think at its core, it's not just one thing. And that's what kind of pisses me off with a lot of these doctors. Like, oh, you just got to do ayahuasca or psilocybin and this. I think it's a holistic approach. I think it's a diet. It's a training. I think aerobic capacity, mitochondrial density. I mean, there's probably like 50 things that kind of encompass all back into this that look like systemic health within the body, within the organism.
Yeah, and that's it. It's a good point because what ended up happening when I was trying to fix it, you know, we're talking 10 years ago, because I had my second issue 3 years after the initial concussion, just before my 30th birthday. So we're going on 13 years. And I was not only exhausted with trying to figure it out, but financially it was crippling me trying to figure it out because I didn't have the big NHL contract with the right insurance to take care of me post game. So it pretty much was on me, right? And I got to the point where in the last few years, I've been able to figure out the stimulus that won't break me. Mm-hmm. So I stick with that because I'm so nervous to like hit a setback and I, you know, don't know where to go with it. But at the same time too, that wiring of being an athlete, like I've lost the ability to test myself, which that took some time to get over. You know, it'd be nice to be able to find that workout that can break you and beat it. So that's gone now. I'm good with it. Trust me, I'm completely good with it now. But if I could refine that, it'd be it would create some peace in my life. That's for sure.
Did a plug? Hold on. Oh, there it is. Hold on. Let me fix this fucking thing. I think I kicked it. Dude, I think we could fix it. At least I think we could put some plans together that one of the things that Dr. Eric Wan on the podcast we did, they ended up sending me this kind of magnet helmet. And I know it sounds kind of crazy, but like the magnets rebalance a lot of the brain waves. And in my scan, one of the problems I was going with was my sleep had been really bad. And I'm usually a good sleeper. Almost 2 years ago, my daughter got attacked by her neighbor's dog and almost killed her. It was a pretty shitty deal. And I was having like 3 a.m. panic attacks where I was waking up like literally like this. I would just wake up and I'd have these like kind of weird, like kind of panicky existential moments, you know, and it was extremely shitty thing. And when I had met Dr. Wan, he looked, he's like, you know, your brain looks great, but you got all this junk in the front. I'm like, I'm not sleeping. And he was like, you know, I want you to try this helmet. And 30 days later, all of that had cleared up and I was sleeping fine and I wasn't having these panic attacks. So it was helping me. I mean, you know, obviously my daughter healing and her being fine was a big driver for that. But even though I still had this like, it's a fucking dark time. And that helmet, to the point where it's funny, my wife was like, I think you're it's changing your attitude. And I'm like, yeah, it's probably helping me dramatically. And she's like, well, you seem a lot more, what's the word? She said, a lot more kind of prickly a little bit. And I'm like, yeah, because I think what I'm doing is I'm purposely dumbing things down so that things don't bother me. And I'm feeling better. So now I'm feeling like a little bit more willing to kind of battle on some stuff. So I don't know if it was good for marriage or whatever, but I felt 100% better.
And then honestly, you did mention the emotional side of psilocybin, the major dose. Yeah, it did not fix a traumatic brain injury, but it kind of emotionally allowed you to find your triggers pretty easily. It gave you a different outlook on life. And, you know, it's almost like it allows you to see your shortcomings and recognize them before they come into play. So it was a life changer for relationships and outlooks and stuff like that, but you still have a brain injury. So it's a good
part
of it.
I think the microdose is actually better. I think doing like a periodic, I know for me, periodically it's actually like on a Saturday, I'll like get up, drink some coffee and like, you know, this, like the microdose stuff and like go walk around in the woods for a couple hours and like go kind of just enjoy being in nature. Like that is so cathartic for me and helping. And it's still, even if I didn't do it, but I do know that like that little kind of like connection piece. I had a pretty amazing moment like with that. Like it's funny. The did you ever read the book, The Immortality Key?
No, I haven't.
Check it out. It's I grew up Catholic. And I never really connected with religion in Catholicism, like sitting there.
Same.
And it like in the first few pages of the book, the guy literally like prints my life where he's like, I sat there and I was like, how come like you see these people around and you're like, why not me? Like, why don't I feel more connected to this? Like, why, like, you know, and you see people and you go to church and you hear people talk about their faith and this, and they were so passionate. And it wasn't that you didn't want to have it. It's just like, it doesn't speak to me that way. And I remember sitting there as a kid at Catholic church or, you know, going to church and like listening to it and the pageantry and all this and like the messages, and I could understand it, but it just never really connected. Like I didn't feel like this same kind of emotional connection that there was, you know, this imaginary guy up in the sky that loves us and takes care of us, even though, you know, you read Old Testament and he wasn't that way. I mean, there was just a lot of confusion. And when you asked the priest and the nuns, they'd be like, oh, you just don't believe. And I remember saying to them, where in life is it like this? Like, for example, if I said to you, hey, dude, send me your credit card. Everything's going to be fine. I just want to have it. Have faith that I won't do anything bad. You'd be like, I'm not giving you my fucking credit card. I'm not going to pick up a hitchhiker and hope to God that he's okay. But yet, right? It we're not wired that way. But then in with religion, okay, you're telling me that there's this guy up there that lived, you know, and you kind of go through this whole thing and you're like, okay, well, I've never seen any of this. Oh, you just don't believe enough. Like that felt kind of disingenuous to me. And I remember just kind of like kind of salted me a little. And it wasn't until I read The Mortality Key that I understood like the Christian mysticism and what these people saw. And I think it was a connection to some of these more psychedelic properties. Like they went back and looked at like the chalice from like, you know, the early Christians, and there was psychedelic properties in the wine. And like when they did a study, I think in the 70s at Duke, where they did like, they took people that were, you know, terminal stage 4 cancer patients and gave them large doses of psilocybin. And then they sat with them and listened to what they had to say. And the writings of those people were identical to the early Christians. And that's what kind of started this whole book. So I remember, you know, taking it and then going out. And I remember like all of a sudden I heard the wind and the sun hit me. And I realized, I was like, oh man, this is what they felt. Like if I had been, you know, 8 years old and had this same feeling, like this would have been a completely different conversation for me. And that was like that book put a lot of like clarity into, you know, not only organized religion, but kind of understanding your place. And I really think that we're so disconnected that now you almost need something to kind of like plug you back into it a little bit. So I've had some really good experiences based upon, you know, the podcasts and some of the other things we've done. But I think in terms of like fixing the mental issues, I think you got to be really, you know, like I don't know what makes people pop. And for you, it might be something else. It could be, but I think there's definitely a path to follow and introduce you to some interesting things that I think will definitely help and kind of attack it from a different way.
Yeah. And the other thing too, that I'd be interested in is a lot of the things you mentioned, I've tried, but the volume that you attacked them with is significantly different than say what was prescribed to me. I mean, I was the hyperbaric chambers, I think. My version of it was going once a week for 4 weeks.
Yeah, no, that doesn't
quite
work.
Quite a bit different, right? You know?
No, so. No. So then the other problem too is they spin you on the wrong chamber. So if this chamber is soft, it doesn't, like there's no research to support any of the soft chambers. So it has to be like a hard, you know, like you're in like a dive tank. And it's a really, it's a time under tension, it's a dose thing. Like the protocol that they wrote was, 40 sessions, which is, you know, done in succession, and they do 5 on, you know, 2 off, and you kind of do it. You know, and now I know Dr. Joe's tested a lot of different protocols where they'll go like, they'll do 3 1-hour sessions a day. They've done a ton of different stuff, but I follow the more traditional one. But I didn't notice anything for the first 10 or 12 or 15 that I went to for the first couple of weeks. And then I remember right about 20, I was like, oh fuck, I feel way different, to the point where, my eyeball became really saturated with oxygen, to the point where like my vision was probably like a 20/10. I remember we were driving and I could read a sign. I asked my wife, I'm like, can you read that sign? She's like, what sign? I was like, way down there. And she's like, can you fucking read that? I'm like, yeah, like a laser beam. whereas, you know, Doc Parsley had it done and his eyes went the other way, to the point where he thought he was blind and couldn't see, you know, he couldn't see 2 feet in front of him. So it kind of affects people in different ways, but, just cognitively, it was, you know, the only issue we run into is the, you know, the legit chambers are about 100 to anywhere. I think there are 100, maybe 75 to 150,000 for the good ones.
I know,
which, but you can go to, I mean, there's places to find that are legit. I just, I keep hoping. I know, Doc Parsley, who's my neighbor, lives down the road. He keeps tempting me with opening like a research facility. And I was like, Doc, if you get a hyperbaric chamber in there, I'm gonna swing by every single day. And he's like, come on, I'll put you in the test. So I think being able to do it, there definitely is. And I think the problem with most hyperbarics, the reason it fails, one, it's the wrong chamber. 2, they don't go deep enough. 2, the time is fucked. And they don't really explain to you what the protocol is.
Yeah. And the other thing that's just frustrating, and I'm sure you went through it at some point, you know, you're 85% of the way there and you know, just something is just missing, and if you could just catch that one thing, it would be normal again. Like I said, I'm at peace with it now, but I miss competing. You know, I missed those kind of things and being able to lead by example versus telling people how good I think our workout is, type thing. So
there's that feeling of being a little like kind of imposter syndrome, that little bit of disingenuous nature, and you're like, fuck, I'd like to be able to go strap it up and show these people. Like I get that I think every high performer I've met suffers from a little bit of imposter syndrome. And if they don't, I think that they're probably the imposter. So
that's a good way to put it.
Yeah.
No, I agree. It's, you know, it's always nicer to be able to shut up and just show versus talk about how good you once were. I know that sounds funny, but that's the thing to struggle with. That would be like to be able to come back to that would be nice at some point. So anything, you know,
yeah,
point me in any direction. I'd appreciate that.
Yeah. I definitely got some good stuff for you. So, well, dude, that was awesome. I'm glad we got to connect and go over and learn a little bit more about what you're doing. And I am a strength advocate. So anytime we can get on here and talk strength and more importantly, support anything that's, you know, pushing the message of strength, I'm stoked to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. And like I said, you know, we're training everyday people, and people that are finding themselves in those pop culture gyms. I think we do a pretty damn good job training that everyday person as a strength athlete to their capabilities. And that's our lane. We're not saying we're here to train the next John looking to peak at combined, right? We're working with everyday people, making them strong. So yeah, I appreciate you having me on. Like I said, a light bulb went off when I saw you speak at that conference in Austin. It was funny because it was like the first time I saw some like organization in the CrossFit world, which was, you know, I'm like, okay, so this can be done in a different way. I'm like, all right, this got me thinking. So I appreciate that. And when was that? Do you have any idea? Was that like
circa 2008, 2009?
Yeah, super cool.
Yeah, because we launched CrossFit Football in March 31st, 2009. I retired. I got hurt at the in 2008. In September, and then I came home, had knee surgery, and I was chilling on the couch. So it was probably sometime like in that like late 2008, 2009, whenever they did it. But it was in Austin, I remember. And then we launched, and it was great. And I was excited to go back again. And then they were, to quote Rob Wolf, complete cock faces. That was Rob Wolf's favorite term for Glassman and Castro and those guys, cock faces. I just call them Martians because they were so weird. Like, I just thought they were from Mars. I'm like, how do you treat people like that? And how do you run a business with this fucking level of customer service? And just blows my fucking mind.
Nuts. I was at Rob Wolf's last nutrition certification in Atlanta the week before the Black Box Summit that buried him. So I remember all those days. But I mean, you know, long story short, it's nice to virtually shake your hand 15 years later. You know, at that point, your message landed and I appreciate it. Probably helped steer me in this direction I'm in today, which, you know, we're chipping away at and proud of, but I think we still got some ears to make some noise.
Sounds good, man. Hey there, Power Athlete Nation. Big shout out to all the heavy hitters who stuck around till the final whistle. If you've been soaking in the knowledge bombs and epic tales we've been dropping for free, here's your chance to be a game changer. Swing by klfi.com/powerathlete and toss a few bucks our way to keep the podcast fueled and firing on all cylinders. That's ko-fi.com/powerathlete. Your support makes a difference. See ya.
Save big on your Thanksgiving feast, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound packs of juicy Kroger red, green, or black seedless grapes for $3.99 with your card and a digital coupon. Then get 1-pound packs of flavorful Private Selection 80% lean Angus ground chuck for $4.99 each with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.